Welcome to the 25th United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten, and I'm joined today by our special guest, Paul Parker. Paul, as you all know, played for Manchester United, played for England, and he played for Fulham, who are United's opponents again this weekend. Paul's been living in Singapore for the last 2 or 3 years, where he works as an analyst on television there, and he's in Singapore now. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Tell us what you're up to out there.
At the moment in time, I used to work for ESPN, but now it has become now Fox Sports. Just this weekend just gone, it's just done a big changeover. So we've gone from wearing collar and tie to now just being quite casual in what we wear, the kind of American way. So that's made life a little bit easier, or maybe difficult. I don't know yet. I haven't really tried it. As well, I'm involved in partnership and a soccer school out here as well. It does very, very well, very successful. We're just starting our own, getting our own international tournament this week in May, which will be the first of its kind as such here in Singapore. And I'm actually bringing out 5 or 6 players to play in a kind of a guest game against some ex-Singapore internationals in that tournament as well. And I've just agreed with Sharpie to come out. Dennis Irwin's coming. Coley should be coming as well. And a few other players coming as well. But I have to mix that with some Liverpool players as well, because Singapore is very pro-Liverpool and very pro-Manchester United.
So Liverpool and United are the two biggest teams there?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. That's what it's all about. Every game I do out here, I'm always, to be honest, it's generated around Manchester United, everything. And as well, I work with a certain scouser called Steve McMahon. So he does predominantly all Liverpool games. It's just that he is as pro-Liverpool as what Paddy Querin is as pro-Manchester United. It's embarrassing sometimes.
Do you get on well with him?
As good as anybody else, really, which can make it difficult. But he's that kind of character. He's a love him or hate him person. So in theory, if anyone's going to ask me, I'm always going to sit on the fence on that one. Not that I generally do, but I will sit on the fence on that one, because it's like sometimes it's like being with a missus. You've got to find the right time to speak to him because you don't know how the mood is.
Do you ever have arguments with him?
No, not such. I'm not one of those people. I've got an opinion, but I'm not going to get involved in anything like a major stand-up or anything. At the end of the day, I am still very pro-Manchester United, but I think I'm quite honest about things. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong, but if I think there's something wrong, and even if I believe that maybe the boss has done something wrong, then I will come out and say it. Sometimes with Steve McMahon, Liverpool never do no wrong. You know, everything's 100% every time. Like the Oldham game, they were going to win 3-0, 3-4-0.
And they didn't.
We all know what happened there, didn't we?
I once went to interview him when he was manager of Blackpool, and he fined me for using my mobile phone. I said, "Why are you finding me?" He said, look at that. And he pointed to a notice behind me, which said, "You're not allowed to use your mobile phone." So I got fined £1 for using it. Yeah. I think it was because I was a Manchester United fan. I don't think he liked that.
He has really, in theory, got a really bitter side about Manchester United. It's unbelievable. I've never really ever sensed anything like it. Yes, I've played at Anfield, and I've been to Liverpool, tried to go there socially, then suddenly realised it wasn't easy going to Liverpool socially as a Man United player as it was as a QPR player. So that suddenly woke me up to life in the North West. But Coy, he really hates Manchester United.
What happens when you go to Liverpool as a Manchester United player? Because Giggsy used to go to Cream quite a lot in the 90s, and I know you were out quite a bit when you were at United. And when Andy Cole joined United, he used to go over to Cream with Giggsy as well. What was it like as a United player?
It could be quite partisan sometimes, to be honest, but because you get to know a few people in Liverpool, in theory, if you're with them, you're safe.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. You're safe, you're in the right company. But it's not the kind of place you would kind of walk into on your own. So you wouldn't go in there and just walk in there and like, "Look at me, I'm a Manchester United player, I've come across it." Not the way like Liverpool players walking, any clubs in Manchester. They used to come to Manchester. There was never a problem, but it wasn't reciprocated in Liverpool at all. You know, there was a major, major hate for Manchester United. And me being from London, and I've never sensed anything like that before as what I did going out in Liverpool. Saying that, I did go out shopping once in Leeds, and that was a nightmare as well. So
what happened?
Oh, I went, what did I go to? I went out shopping just in the city centre and just walking about, and all of a sudden I started hearing a few, you know, scum kind of thing, and what's going on there? And I ignored it because I was just naive to it, never expected, and all of a sudden, what are you doing on our town, you scum? And to be honest, it's the first time I've been actually called red scum because I spent most of my time being called black, so it was a bit different.
And did anything come of it? No problems, you just walked away?
No, it's all verbal, to be honest, really. I mean, obviously it changes when they're in the terraces, they're going to do everything to them in the terraces, but when it comes face-to-face, you can do quite a lot from a distance, to be perfectly honest.
Well, or mouth. You said you were shopping in Liverpool, shopping in Leeds. You had some quite colourful outfits in the 90s. I can remember one blazer that you and Giggsy wore. I think it was black and white. Do you ever look back and cringe at some of the things you wore, or were you quite a snappy dresser, willing to defend your reputation?
Some of it was awful, just one of those things you see and you want it. It's just, it was like me and seeing Giggsy. We went out and tried to act. And that game was, I think it was the Blackburn game, I think it was, if I remember right. And then, remember, I've got a book here from, I've got something made up, some pictures from when we won that first league title. And there's pictures of MC, pictures of Giggsy, and we've all got silly jackets on. I think the one had a waistcoat with it as well. But it's just one of those silly things. One of the things you go and do, you see it in the shop and you go and buy it. It's as simple as that. If you go and do, you like it, and then you wear it once, and be honest, you can't wear it again for another few months because it sticks out like a sore thumb. And all of a sudden you think, how much did I spend on all that stuff, and where is it now? And to be honest, it's mostly been dumped, it's mostly in storage, my stuff. It could be anywhere, but it could never really, in theory, ever be worn again.
Giggs is still playing. It's incredible, isn't it? He's 40 this year.
Yeah, I know. It is. Well, it's just the way it is. I mean, Ryan doesn't put weight on, does he? I mean, he must have so many tapeworms in his body, eating away all the junk food he eats and that. It's unbelievable. To be honest, how he's done it, I think the modern game has definitely helped him with the way that it's kind of the tackling, the way they've sorted all that out. Because everyone used to attempt to try and kick Ryan when he was younger. Everyone tried. We even tried in training quite a few times. But the main thing you want to do, the teams with picked 8-a-side games, you always want to be in Ryan's team. You never want to be up against him. But as he's got older, and obviously he loses that little bit of pace, he got wiser and wiser about his game. And to be honest, I remember Ryan playing left back one game, and he was absolutely brilliant. You know, you could put him anywhere, he was absolutely brilliant. He was terrifying with his pace. Sometimes in training, we used to do like runs, and Ryan would run backwards, and he'd still be beating you or be there with you while he's running backwards. You know, and that's the time when you really wanted to kick him.
I'm told that him and Scholes are still the main men in training, even now.
It wouldn't surprise me, especially Scholesy. I mean, Scholesy was fantastic. I mean, in my opinion, everyone keeps talking about, you know, the era of like Butts, you know, Nicky Butts, and the Nevilles and Beckham and all those, you know, around that time, that Youth Cup winning team. We talked about David Beckham. Even then, Scholesy was the best by far, the best player. Stuck out like a sore thumb. He stuck out about the way he played. He stuck out because he was ginger, and he stuck out because he was a nasty bit of work if you kicked him. He wouldn't wait. He wouldn't bide his time. He would just kick you straight back. And with Scholesy, he was just that way about him. Other than away from the football pitch, wouldn't say boo to a goose. I mean, I've chatted to him a few times in the last few years about a few things, and he hasn't changed. He hasn't changed as a person at all. I'm sure that everyone out there who knows him, I suppose even yourself, Andy, could say that Scholes is still the same kid from when he was 16, 17, 18.
He's quite a dry, witty fella.
Yeah, he can be very cutting with what he says. You wouldn't want to cross him.
No, he doesn't suffer fools at all.
He doesn't have it.
What was Roy Keane like on the training field, in games and in the dressing room?
Roy was just what he was when he first turned up, when he was in South Africa, 93-94 season. He turned up in South Africa and he was just mad. It was just the edge to him, you know, especially when he had a drink or something, it would just get louder and louder, and then you had to want to put a cap on it because you just don't know what's going to happen next. On the training ground, if you didn't give him the right ball, if he gave you a pass and you didn't do anything positive with it, you lost possession, he'll go mad. He would have a go at your underpants. In the dressing room, he'd have a go at them. Roy would be argumentative about everything, but one thing, Roy was never ever going to lose an argument with you. So what we all virtually done is that we never answered him back. When he started, we just never got involved in it because it was going on and on and on. He'll drive you mad in the end.
Yeah, yeah. I love hearing stories about him because there's no shortage of stories about him. Jesper Blomqvist was convinced that he still wasn't speaking to him because of a bad pass given in a game in Turin in 1999. And I bumped into Roy just before Christmas and I mentioned this to him. And he said, "Oh, great player, Jesper, great player." And I said, "You might want a word with him, actually, because he's under the impression that you've still got the hump with him from all those years ago."
I mean, that sums up. I mean, Jesper said that to me when I played in the Masters with him quite a few months ago. I think the last year I played a couple of Masters with Jesper. And Jesper could still play now, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I saw him play in Sweden a couple of years ago.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Brilliant.
Very unlucky with injuries, but I saw him play in the Swedish second division. He's just got a beautiful technique.
Oh, you should see him in the sixes. You know, you'd pick him as your first pick every time. Especially me now, 48. I mean, if he got near me, I think my guts would just collapse because I know they're going to get twisted.
He's become a father, though, now. His head's fallen off.
Yeah.
So he's
cut. I know that he's become a father because no one sees him now.
Exactly.
The missus has cut the thumbs on his head straight away.
Exactly. He's gone from doing every one to, like, just disappearing, changing his number.
Yeah. He's an old person for fire now. Even Ronnie Johnson says that as well.
Yeah. What was your highlight as a Manchester United player, Paul?
I suppose it has to be, the Blackburn Rovers game.
Yeah.
92-93, to be perfectly honest. Playing it with a little bit of alcohol in your body, like a few members of the side, and I think the occasion, really. You know, it'd have been great to actually go out there and win it yourself. I mean, that must be a fantastic feeling to do that, but still, after what the club had endured for 26 odd years and what we had endured a year before, really in theory, I know they always say that the team that win the league deserves the league. I still believe we threw the league away. The last, championship, we threw it away to Leeds United. But I think at the end of the day, winning that Premier League virtually wiped out the Football League, to be perfectly honest, in that sense of Manchester United winning it. Everything else has just seemed to have been forgotten before then, and Leeds never maybe got any real credit for winning that last Football League, because the Premier League has certainly obliterated, the fall of the Football League. But it's just the fact of, obviously, that night around Bruce's, that evening when we go 1-0 down, get a rollicking from the gaffer, come out second half and we annihilate them. I was on the verge of taking £100 off of Pally, and Pally goes and scores that free kick, so he squares it for the season, so I lose that £100 from him. And I think really the night before and the night after, and then trying to catch up 24 hours later, figure out exactly what's gone on, because I've had so much booze inside me, it's incredible.
Was anyone sober in that Blackburn match?
That's a good question, to be perfectly honest. I'm trying to think who could have been. I'm trying to think who wasn't around Bruce's. I think everyone was, to be honest. Anyone who wasn't there, anybody who wasn't drinking.
And what about a low point? I mean, a year earlier, when United had lost the league, that little run of games at Luton Town away, West Ham away, and Liverpool away. I can't remember as bad a time being a United fan, but then I didn't experience...
Forest at home as well, I think.
Yeah, and the Forest at home when Neil Webb was substituted and took about half an hour to walk off the pitch, if I'm not mistaken. It was just a horrible time because your expectations had been built up. But I remember walking out of Anfield in April 92 and genuinely thinking Manchester United will never win the league. It's just not something that's going to happen.
Yeah, it was. I mean, especially for me, I come from Queen's Park Rangers and... Now all of a sudden I've gone from a team that's happy to finish close to the top as possible and hopefully get a good run in the FA Cup to a side that must win the league. It's got to win the league. It's as simple as that. And all of a sudden you get beaten by Queen's Park Rangers at Old Trafford 4-1, something you never expected. Never really got close enough during my time at Queen's Park Rangers. And then obviously that period, that Easter period and everything else that went after it. And then I was... struggled a little bit with the hamstring problem in the first season as well, and missing that period of games as well. does you no good sitting there, because being at Manchester United, the only time you thoroughly enjoy it is when you're actually playing. It's no fun being in the stands at Manchester United. You need to be involved, you want to be involved. And so I wasn't involved in that bit, and just sitting there watching it, and it's not a nice feeling, because you feel that you're letting everyone down. You feel that everyone's giving you daggers because you're in the stand and you're thinking that no one really believes that you're injured. You know, they think, you know, you're believing that they think you're avoiding it. You know, you haven't got the guts for it. It's not a nice feeling.
A few players who've been injured have said that. Probably Paul Lake, the Manchester City player, he wrote a book, and it was graphic how he described it. He said he started to hate going out, he became depressed. People had come up to him and say, must be easy for you, earning money for doing nothing. And it just took over his life. Sometimes people don't understand, if you're injured, you are injured, and you actually won't be playing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I remember at that one time, even from when I was at Fulham, and I'd broken the fibula, which is a small bone. But even to myself, I found it difficult, because I'm walking around as normal, and I think to myself, I'm fine. The moment you try and run, that's when the bones start clicking. But people, when you're injured, they see you walking around as normal, so they think you're fine. They don't actually know, you know, some of the things that are actually going on internally. And it is difficult. And I would have to say then, you know, it really hurt players. It affected players. Because to be honest, he wasn't earning the masses of money. You know, I was still on, if I played a game, I got extra money. And if we won the game, I got extra money. It's as simple as that. So for me, it wasn't good for me as an individual not playing, but financially as well, there was you know, it wasn't good for me, because my incentives were all involved in the fact of me playing, winning, and obviously Manchester United winning, winning major competitions. That's how it's all surrounded for me. You know, and if I wanted to earn more money as a weekly wage, I could have stayed in London and signed for top. Well, you know, I had ambition. I had something about me that wanted to, you know, obviously I wanted to play for the country, but I wanted to play for the biggest team, as simple as that. And when I got the opportunity, if Manchester United hadn't come in, then I would have stayed in London. It was as simple as that. But when Manchester United come knocking, go. It's as simple as that.
It's incredible that Tottenham could outspend Manchester United as recently as 20 years ago. And for you, you were a London lad. Tottenham were a big club in London. Old Trafford must have really impressed you when you came up to look around.
Oh, it did. It certainly did. I mean, in the fact that I sold my soul, I think I virtually told the gaffer I was signing. It was simple as that. If I hadn't gone to Old Trafford, I think there's every likelihood that I mostly wouldn't have signed. But I think once you get there and you see it, even then in 1991 to what it was then, even compared to grounds now, it was still awesome, the place. It was something about it. There was cars parked out front, there was people sitting there watching the grass grow. It had everything about it that I'd never seen. Everything, you know, it was just something, you know, something out of this world compared to when, you know, being at Fulham, a small little place, you know, with an old cottage on top of it, and Queen's Park Rangers, a mini little stadium at the time, very small, you know, internally maybe 20, 30 people working inside it, and Old Trafford, even then, it was like this big machine, people everywhere. It was something that I'd never believed I would see. You know, when you turn up there to play at Old Trafford as an opponent, you don't relate to it. But when you turn up and you're walking inside of it and you're seeing the gaffer's office and you're sitting there chatting to him and he knows everything about the place, then you know that you're going into something big, and you think, can't afford to miss out on this opportunity, because it's only going to happen once.
The first autograph you signed as a Manchester United player, according to a recent guest on this podcast, was to a young lad called Dean. And he went up to you and you said, I've just signed, this is my first autograph. And Dean Holden went on to become a professional footballer. He played.
Oh, is that the Oldham boy?
He played for Oldham. He played for Bolton Wanderers,
so and come to London as well. Didn't
and
he?
And he told that story that he was the first person to get an autograph from you as a young United fan.
No, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, he told it a couple of weeks ago on this very podcast. You talked about Fulham. You played at Fulham. It was a very different club to the club that it is now. They were still at Craven Cottage, but even the ground was falling apart compared to the quite nice stadium that it is now. What are your memories of your time at Craven Cottage?
I went to Fulham as an 11-year-old. as a schoolboy, just going training on a Wednesday night in Dagenham, school holidays, jumping on the train, me, a lad called Dean Coney, a couple of other lads. Me and Dean played in the same Sunday side from 9 years of age. We ended up both going to QPR together as well. So we had a lot of years together. But used to travel up during school holidays just to go and train, play a game at the weekend. It was just one of those places that just took kids on from all different parts, especially in Surrey. And I just saw Fulham. That's all I saw. They took me as a guest to the cup final in 75. Ended up signing an apprentice. And when you was an apprentice then, especially at Fulham, you only got about a week and a half off. We was getting in there. I had to be in at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So I was leaving home at about 5:30, 6:30 to jump on the train all the way from a station called Elm Park, which is near Dagenham, all the way up to Putney Bridge, walking through the park, Bishop Park, to the stadium, get in there, do the boots, do the kit, get the kit across to the training ground, which was at Roehampton, put the kit out for me pros, professional footballers had about 5 or 6. And then, by the time that's all done, then try and train. And then you train for about 3/4 an hour, because by the time you've trained, the pros are coming in, you have to come in and you have to put their kit away. So as a young apprentice, you never really trained with the time of the pros. So then you come back to the ground, then you have to clean the boots, do the kit in the washing machine. And by the time you finish there, then you're training in the afternoon. And we virtually, because it was getting near dark, you're virtually just training on the pitch. On the pitch in the terraces, you was doing terraces, you was running up the Putney end, which is down the Hammersmith end, which is the opposite end to where the cottage is. And so you do the terracing, and then getting home by 6 or 7 o'clock at night, and then starting again. There wasn't much football because of the fact of when you was apprentice, you was learning your trade, picking up, cleaning boots, putting kit in washing machines, and avoid really, in theory, saying no to pros, because I made a mistake of doing that once to Tony Gale. Tony Gale was one of my, I looked after Tony Gale as an apprentice, and he asked me to pick a towel up, but me being a young, cocky kid said, no, I'm not doing that. I think I'm being clever. And all the pros just grabbed me, took me into the boot room and just boot polished me. covered me in boot polish. And then I thought myself, okay, I got done that. That was about 10 minutes. And when I say they was putting boot polish on me, they actually stripped me first and then put boot polish all over me. And the brushes, they weren't worried about so much. It was just a case of polish going on. So the wooden back of it was hitting me as well. Oh. So it was a little bit of pain. And then by the time they finished, I was a little bit darker than what I normally am. So I decided I'd go in the shower. And as you know, wax polish isn't easy to get off. So I was in the shower for about 2 hours trying to scrub the best I can, especially more trying to get it off my face, because I didn't look good. I was a black person. I was a blacker Al Jolson. That's what I was. It was. So I was, then I had to, everyone, all the people I travelled with had left. They couldn't, it was too late. So I had to then leave the ground by about 8:30. And I've got most of it off my face and little bits off my hand, but I was having to sit on the train with like boot polish around my face and trying to kind of keep my head down. And I got home and my mum didn't know what. My mum was worried. She thought I'd have been attacked on the street or something. But then actually, when I showed her the rest of my body, oh, it was unbelievable. It took about a week and a half for it to go. I was using all kind of detergents and everything to get it off. So I was part of a joke for quite a few weeks at Fulham because of that, and kind of taught me a big lesson on how to respect professional footballers.
And all because you wouldn't pick a towel up?
Because I wouldn't pick a towel up, yeah. I'd just kind of been cocky and arrogant and said no. And if he'd asked me again, I would have done it, maybe being a bit arrogant about it, I would have done it. But I never got asked a second time. It was just done then. They just grabbed me, and that's how it was, really. I think if you ask anybody of my era who was an apprentice, they could tell you certain stories what happened to them or other people as an apprentice. I mean, it was Christmas where you had to sing a song. They got you, we had the old fella Tom, an old bloke who's look after dressing rooms, and he used to have his brush in his wellet and boots, so you get stripped naked. and they put you in Wellington boots, and you had to use his broom as a guitar, stand on the actual medical bed in the middle of the dressing room.
Naked.
Naked.
Yeah.
And you had to sing a song. The only thing, though, as well, is that they used to have a rope round your unmentionables. So if you were singing bad, it was that rope as well, with the little bits off the side. The rope that used to burn?
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but it was like nylon. You used to have that tied around you. And it was Tony Gale, who always used to instigate it. He was the one. And it got quite painful. It got really painful sometimes. It was crack. And to be honest, I was born a black man with no rhythm. And it was excruciating. It was absolutely awful. I had 2 years of it. Even when I was in the Fulham first team at 17, I still didn't get signed pro until I was 18. I had to do my 2 years still. Malcolm McDonald's made everyone do their 2 years. And I had to still go and do it again, even as somebody who's been playing with the first team. The player I mentioned earlier, Dean Coney, actually done a runner. He ran and hid in the toilets in a Riverside stand. He wouldn't come out. He was in there till late at night, in bits, in tears. Couldn't do it. Could not do it.
What did you sing?
Oh, I couldn't remember. It was around Christmas time, so I must have tried to sing a Christmas song. It just wasn't me. Nothing about me says about singing. I'm a great singer in my car, singing Earth, Wind and Fire or Barry White songs at the moment. Fantastic. But if you open a window, it would sound awful.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Got some readers' questions for you, some very random ones.
Yeah.
What's more important, to win the league or the European Cup?
I always believe that a league's more important, because the main thing about it is that it's about being strong at home. You've got to be to go in, you've got to be the best team in your own domain. Like Manchester United want to be champions in England. Simple as that. You want to be champions of England. To be actually seen as proper champions of Europe, you've got to be champions in your own country. First and foremost, Manchester United done that. We've seen Barcelona do that. We've seen Liverpool and Chelsea win the Champions League and haven't been anywhere near good enough to be anywhere near the league at the times. Like Chelsea last year, we've seen Liverpool 2005. They were poor side in the Premier League, and yet they won the European Cup. You can't seriously take teams as champions of Europe if they can't win their own. If they're not given the benefit of doubt. If they've had a great season, they've narrowly missed out on winning their domestic league, and you give them a little bit of respect. But those two sides, in my opinion, don't really deserve it, because they weren't close to being the second best team in their domestic league.
Next reader's question. Is it true you used to live in the Britannia Hotel?
No, that's not true. I lived in the Midland Hotel. I used to go in the Britannia Hotel to go to a nightclub Saturdays.
Okay.
That's about it a few times. No, I lived in the Midland Hotel for about 6 months.
Okay.
I went into there initially and I just got a little bit lazy and I decided to stay a little bit longer. I don't think the club were too happy with me, but it kind of got me embedded into the city centre. I got to know a lot of people around Manchester city centre from being in that hotel.
Ruud van Nistelrooy or Andy Cole is the next reader's question.
Coley. Without a shadow of doubt. Coley, excuse me, Coley has been, I've got him out here to do a few things in Singapore. I've got him to a few, one thing in Bangkok. I've got him coming here next May as well for me. Coley, when he first came to Manchester United, was hard work, but he's, he's mellow, got better and better, and he's in his position now as an ambassador for Manchester United. I think he's absolutely brilliant. His CV says it all, and his personality as well makes such a difference. Ruud van Nistelrooy is what I saw of him. I didn't know him personally, but what he was a fantastic goal scorer, and goal scorers generally are selfish in what they do on the pitch. And I think Ruud, I think what I saw of him, what I heard about him, I would say that he was quite selfish off the park as well.
What do you prefer, dogs or cats?
I'm going to go with cats.
Okay. Why?
Just not a lover of dogs. I just think dogs, just the fact of having to walk them, having to take it, you have to take walking and you have to clear up after them. Why? Cats are as clean as pet you're ever going to really get. They look after themselves to a point. No, cats.
Next question. Why did you always look so moody driving around Manchester in your Saab convertible?
Oh, that's a terrible thing. I thought I was quite a happy... But I really, that's cool. All I can say is if I did, I can only apologise. That's normally not me. I find that, I wish I could put the clock back and change that bit, really. I shouldn't have been like that. I can't answer that question properly.
Your reputation around Manchester's a good one. You're seen as being a friendly fella. But,
obviously I've offended one person.
He might have seen you on a bad day.
He might have seen me on a bad day. I think if I remember rightly, when I had that Saab, I think there was a few bad... I'll tell you what, I had that Saab, I think it was like my last year or so, within that last year, my time at Manchester United. It wasn't my most enjoyable period, being injured, fear of losing my place to someone who'd become a great fullback, and the fact of really knowing that my time was growing near to the end at Manchester United, which isn't a nice feeling, and that'd be backed by many a player.
So you jump into your Saab and maybe you weren't as happy as you had been a year or two earlier.
Exactly right. Because generally I always had a smile on my face until that latter part after I had that operation on my ankle and I just couldn't get anywhere near back to what I was. And in my head, mentally, I knew that I was struggling. And then with Gary coming in and understanding the way the boss works, about young players, how he likes to treat them if they've done well, I knew there was no coming back for me.
Next reader's question. What do you make of people who put their Christmas decorations up in November?
I live in a country where they actually do that. Singapore put them up really early on Orchard Road. A lot of people know Singapore. The main shopping road, where there's about a Gucci shop every 10 yards. They do everything early here. And they put them up at the end of November, and it's an absolute nightmare. They just sell the place as a tourist thing. Chinese New Year coming up, starting on the weekend of the 10th, 9th and 10th of February. They've started celebrating it. The moment Christmas had gone, they put everything up for Chinese New Year. And Chinese New Year lasts for 2 weeks as well. So Singapore and this region becomes dead. People don't work, nothing happens for 2 weeks. So I have to say that I'm not a lover of that. But at the end of the day, if I was back in the UK and someone done it early in the UK, I would love it. Because the one thing I do miss about England... it's Christmas in England. Not the weather, just Christmas around people who generally love the atmosphere and the vibe of Christmas.
Next reader's question. Were you trying to give me a heart attack when you hammered the ball off your own bar at Anfield that time?
If it was intended, I hope it didn't really get that close. But let's just call that a state of panic on my part. And that's what we have to call it. I think I remember that one. I think I got the, as they say, the hair dry from the gaffer on that one. I think even he questioned me exactly what I was doing there. But if someone, if anyone could witness what it feels like to be on that pitch at Anfield playing for Manchester United, you can understand that now and again your head can go in a game like that.
Next question. Is pork chops with loads of gravy still your favourite meal?
Oh, look at that. I miss it badly. Pork chops, gravy, and boiled potatoes. I absolutely miss it because you just can't get it. You just can't get the pork chops like you get at home. It's just, get the gravy when I come back in the summer and get all that stuff that you can't get here. But I do miss the pork chops without a doubt. You get pork chops here, but there's no bones in them, so it's not the same. So there's someone there who's done their homework to find that one.
Next question. What's the best album you've ever heard?
Best album? I think I'm always still going to go with... Something that Earth, Wind & Fire's done,
okay.
I have to say.
Okay. Have you ever shoplifted?
Remember now. I would have said as a schoolboy, yeah. I can't lie on that one, yeah. Even I can remember even doing it in the sweet shop down the road from the school I went to in Ormchurch, going in there. Old Grumpy, he's called it Grumpy's because he was a miserable kid. He was in the shop. He used to put a sign up and he had two school kids at a time, but he used to go in there, just raid it, sweet, when the loader's in there and grab a few sweets. Used to spend all my dinner money in there, just eating sweets rather than actually spending it in the school or even going in the chip shop. It was just always sweets. So I used to go in old Grumpy's and nick a bit. A mate of mine actually went into, I was with my mate one time, and we went up to the West End and he went into, what's it called, Lily White's.
Yeah.
White's in the West End. And he walked into the shop with a limp and walked out the golf club.
Brilliant.
We was on a Red Bus Rover trip. It's one of those, I think they cost about 20 pence and you could just travel on the bus all over London and go anywhere you want in London. And about six or seven of us used to do it every summer. And we did that and he just walked into Lily White's with a limp and walked out of the golf club. It was just one of those things where you were just, adrenaline's buzzing and you're scared, but you're just laughing to yourself. So it's something I've never forgotten.
We've had some questions in from the part of the world where you are now. One reader in Malaysia wants to know, between Singapore and Kuala Lumpur, which city do you prefer?
Oh, that's a hell of a question to ask me that one. I could be kicked out. as a vibrant city, something which... with an edge, which I'm used to from living in the UK. I have to say that KL is a place, is a better place because something different could happen. Something different does happen, and there's a vibe, there's a buzz. Singapore is very, you can have a night out in Singapore and it's a night out. It's no different to going out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Every night's the same in Singapore. Every night's a busy night. There's people out. And, yeah. KL is definitely more vibrant socially. The only thing that it isn't KL is organised. That's the problem. It isn't organised at all. Maybe that makes it different, but Singapore is very organised, road-wise. Everything as a city is very, very organised.
First time I went to KL was in 1995 to watch United pre-season. And we booked into a cheap hotel, me and my mate, and we walked into it and there were about 60 girls and they weren't all receptionists. And we thought, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah, it is that's Southeast Asia. That is the culture. You go to places out here, and it is about that. And you go into some bars, some Chinese bars here with a karaoke, and they give you girls. They say, oh, there you are. You go, no, not interested. No, can't speak a word of English. They just, and you kind of go, no, not interested. And you get told, because of the culture, it's rude to say no, so you end up sitting there and you having this conversation. You might as well be talking to a four before bit of wood. It's just, mainland Chinese. It's just ridiculous, and they try and force whiskey down you. And I hate the smell of whiskey. I had a bad time as a kid, and I next time my dad's teachers. Never recovered since. The smell of it makes me feel sick. And they try and force that down you. It's rude to say no, so you have to swig it, and then you have to hold my nose and. But yes, everyone in the Southeast Asia, in Asia, those kind of things are just everyday things. It's in certain ways, it's not a woman's world.
Okay, next question from that part of the world. Which Southeast Asian delicacy are you most fond of?
Oh, bloody hell. I am so basic. That earlier question about pork chops and that's me all over. I'm here, I kind of stay away a lot from the Chinese kind of food because it's not like Chinese at home. It's not overcooked. It's, you ask for crispy duck here, and to be honest, the only thing crispy is the skin outside because they don't properly cook it. They just eat the skin and sloppy meat inside. And so I would say I'm more Malaysian because Malaysians are more curries. So I kind of go with more of the Malaysian food, which is rendang beef and stuff like that, really, I would say. Definitely not so much Chinese out here because I am basic.
Next question. What are your thoughts on Graham Taylor's tenure as the England manager?
Well, I question him getting rid of so many players after 1990. What he'd done, he got rid of a lot of players. He didn't try and build from what he got. He decided he was going to have a big clear out. I remember him, he left me out of one game. What game was it? I'm trying to think of the game. It was San Marino. San Marino when Stuart Pearce scored that own goal.
Yeah.
We go 1-0 down. I'm in the box watching it. It was at Bologna's ground. It was Bologna where we played Belgium.
David Platt,
yeah, in the second. That was the first knockout game. It was that ground there. And Piercy scores that goal. And to be honest, the majority of the England party, everybody, and I'm including all the suits, you see their shoulders, they were laughing.
Mm.
They were laughing. I think Oliver Lewis' time was up, but they were laughing.
Yeah.
I remember as well in that game, we went down to the dressing room after, and the lads were all laughing because on the bench, Colton Palmer was sucking up big time. Every time the ball went behind the goal, because we had to score so many goals. If you remember, David Platt scored. Every time the goals were scored, David Platt, who looks like George Thornby, by the way, was running into the goal and picking the ball out and putting it back on the halfway line, because we had to score so many goals to give ourselves a chance of going through. And he was doing that every single time. So every time the ball went behind the goal, there was a moat. They had a moat behind the goal, didn't they? In Italy, they had moats, didn't they?
Yeah, in Bologna, that stadium, yeah.
Well, the ball kept going to the moat, and the ball boys are taking a while to get it back. Colton was pleading with Graham Taylor, can he go and get the ball? In other words, he was sucking up to get on the park, and the lads were caning him. And that sums up Colton.
He's in Dubai now, Colton.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, exactly right. And there was another one as well, where the reason why he left me out, I didn't play him against San Marino, because he said that while I've been at Manchester United, he's noticed how, from being a player at Queen's Park Rangers, I used to knock the ball in behind fullbacks and turn people around and knock longer balls. I've got the Manchester United, be it that I was a sweeper or centre-half at QPR as well, by the way, so I didn't really knock that many long balls. He said that he needed a player who, when he crosses the halfway line, his first thought is to get the ball forward into the opponent's box rather than give it to a wide player, namely Andre, or give it to a midfield player, namely Paul Ince or Brian Robson, give it to their feet or knock it in short to spark his feet. He wanted someone who could go into the box. So he played Lee Dixon, because he said Lee's better at that than you, because he's used to playing to Alan Smith. So I got left out in that San Marino game because I didn't kick the ball far enough.
You had some good times for England, though. You set up Gary Lineker in the semi-final against Germany in 1990. That must have been a massive buzz.
Yeah, that was after what happened initially and the ball coming off and it went over Peter Shelton's head. I mean, Peter Shelton jumped as high as a Rizzler, didn't he, really?
Yeah.
Could have got fag paper underneath his feet. That's how high he jumped. Yeah, that was that. But, I mean, be honest, it was just more good fortune. At the end of the day, I just put the ball into the box, and lucky enough, I think five Germans tripped over it. Gary stuck out his big toe, scored, and lucky enough, he didn't go injured with a big toe injury. So that's about as live as Gary's going in the career. Get the ball in the box, there's half a chance he'll come alive. But yes, the World Cup was very big for me. The World Cup, in theory, people knew the name. I led at Queen's Park Rangers, but they didn't know the face, and all of a sudden, the face gets known more because of one World Cup.
So you started getting recognised in the street?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, my local Tesco's, after months of not knowing me or wherever it was when I was living out in Woking and Berkshire, all of a sudden I'm winning it. The place stopped still for me to sign autographs. That's how much it changed.
Is that a good or bad thing?
Let me say, now it's absolutely fantastic to do that now.
Mm.
But I have to say, it's never going to happen again. But at the time, you're nonchalant. You think it's always going to happen. You just don't believe it's ever going to end. And that's the mentality. What it's like as a footballer, to be perfectly honest, you don't really believe it's going to end. Or during my era, you don't believe it's going to end. You always think it's going to be there for you. And then there's always a rude awakening. But, you know, when people come up now, you feel quite gracious, really, in that sense.
Mm. Although I was with in an airport with Roy Keane in the autumn. He wasn't quite grateful for the number of people coming up to him, taking pictures of him.
You should be, because there'll come a time when you look around and you need it sometimes, you want it, you do, you thrive in it, something that, you know, you spend, you know, your best part of your life doing. And be honest, it should make you feel good, because you think to yourself, oh, minute, I've achieved something here.
Yeah.
Regardless of it's so many years ago, I achieved something, which there's a lot of people who would love that feeling, to know that they've gone out and they've, you know, they've made quite a few people happy. They've upset a few, but you've made more happy.
Yeah. Next question. Does it annoy you that your brilliant 1-2 against Spurs in 1993 has been overshadowed by the Erwin Cantona one in the same game?
No, Dennis can have that one. I'll let Dennis have that. Dennis was still my good mate from that time. It was a great goal. Dennis was, as a fullback, was a great goal scorer as well. But I mean, at the end of the day, I remember I got the ball in the halfway line and I virtually wanted to give it. I mean, as soon as I went over that halfway line, I'm looking for crocodiles. I think, so what the hell am I doing here? If I'm going to make a tackle in there, fine, but what am I doing dribbling? And I gave it a chockey, and I was virtually saying in my head, now keep it, I'm going to go back and defend. But I kept running forward and chockey gave it back to me. And then all of a sudden, I got into the box and all of a sudden he gets a bit quick in the box, I noticed, by the way, in the opponent's box. People start moving a little bit quicker, a bit frantic. So I thought myself, I better get rid of this ball quick. And lucky enough, it went straight across Torstev into the far corner. And they called out a textbook finish, to be honest. The only thing that ruined it for me is my celebration. It was absolutely pants. Pants.
What did you do?
Oh, I didn't do anything of any note at all. So every time that comes up somewhere and they put that goal on, I always get up and walk away or I switch it off because I just don't want to see the bit after.
Reading away, cross or shot?
Blackmail ain't good with long noses, so I'm going to have to be honest and say that it was a ball that I was looking to whip across the box to Sharpie and Eric running in, and it bobbled up right into my laces. I couldn't have struck it better if I wanted to. So it was definitely, because if anyone was to see it again, you'd see the goalkeeper, Nicky Hammond, who is actually chief scout now at Reading, was actually moving to his right, knowing that I was looking to whip it across the front of the box. And as he's moving to the right, and it actually swings to his left. And because of the conditions there, because it was very close to being off that game, he couldn't adjust his feet and it whipped into his near post. Now then, if I'd have got my celebration right, I could have won goal of the season, I think, that year as well. But again, I was either too honest or it was just another crap celebration because I didn't get away with it.
And Reading, like Fulham, are completely unrecognisable from the club they were then. They were a third division club in an aging stadium, and now they're a Premier League team.
That's right. I lived in Reading for quite a part of the early time at Fulham. And
why? Why did you live in Reading?
I lived in Wokingham for quite a few years. I lived in Wokingham. I lived in Newbury. That's where I lived too. Newbury when I was at Fulham, and I lived in Wokingham when I was at Queen's Park Rangers. So early parts, so about 91 to 93, sorry, no, 87 to about 89, I lived in Wokingham. So, and then, no, sorry, I'm lying there, 90, because I remember I come back in 90 after the World Cup and had a street party for me when I come back from the World Cup. So it was from about 88 to 90, 91.
That must have been a buzz, having a street party for you.
Yeah, it was a little bit different, yeah, coming back to it, there was banners everywhere, yeah, That was different. That was something which is just, well, again, it was just something which is absolutely unbelievable, which, again, I can talk about. And, well, I don't know if it ever happened again to any footballers in today's ilk, to be honest, really, if that would happen to them. So they don't live on streets now, do they? Live in mansions.
So
that's how it was. But yeah. I remember going back about Reading. I remember I used to go to Elm Park quite a lot, the old grounds. I was very pally with a lad called Trevor Senior, one of their great goal scorers.
That's right, yeah.
So go and watch him play Elm Park quite a bit. And Elm Park was a tip, an absolute tip. So, they've moved on unbelievably since that time to what they've moved into now. And all they need now is stability. If they can get stability, they've got a fantastic stadium in a good part of the country as well with the motorway system to really push on.
Next question. Do you still stick to your belief that David De Gea will cost United the title this year?
Let's put it this way. I always believe, when I look at it, that every side that has won major trophies, Premier League titles, Champion Leagues, have always had sides, and you talk about their great goalkeeper. You always go great goalkeeper. Talk Premier League, we look at Dave Seaman, and we look at Tim Flowers, was a great goalkeeper for Blackburn Rovers. We look at ourselves, we look at Van der Sar, you look at Big P, always great goalkeepers. We even talk about back fours, even at Manchester United, great back fours. Arsenal talk about great back fours. And it worries me that United, we're not talking about a great back four, we're not even talking about a great goalkeeper, but yet Manchester United are 7 points clear. And looking like, you know, City still looking the most fluid and most solid of teams, but can't score enough goals to win games and dropping points when maybe they should be winning. But United are getting the rub of the green. So if you're getting that rub of the green, you've got to say, you know, that the goalkeeper might cost them, is costing them to a point, has cost them, put them back on their back foot quite a few times, but they've got away with it. How long they can do, I've got no idea, but the way it is at the moment, and football is that there's no outstanding team in the Premier League at this given moment.
What do you think United will do against Madrid?
That all depends on what they get. The first game's in Madrid, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
It all depends what they get in Madrid. They've got to come back from Madrid with something to play for. They don't need to be chasing the game. It's as simple as that. If Madrid have got to chase the game, it gives them, or they get in, or United get in front, or they've got something they come back with away goal, Madrid have got to come out, and we know they can't defend. So it makes it even easier. We know United ain't great defending, but still, it gives them every chance. But if they allow themselves to go too far behind and then have to go out and chase it, it could be a major problem. It's as simple as that. And it's all about Ronaldo. And Ronaldo is all about creating impression, playing for himself, dominating everything. He's going to want to come back, even out in Madrid. He's going to want to prove himself. He isn't going to want to do Manchester United any favours, because he's a professional, he's a pro. So yes, you know, his heart's obviously with Manchester United, but Real Madrid pays wages. It's as simple as that. So they need to, you know, they need a comfort zone, as far as I'm concerned.
So who will go through out of the two?
Who will go through? Oh, thanks for putting
it. It's an hard one, isn't it? It's impossible to answer.
I really think it's an impossible one.
Yeah.
You know, my heart will always say Manchester United, but Real Madrid have got nothing else to play for. Mourinho's got nothing to play for. He's only got that to play for. Mourinho will say to himself, if I can beat Manchester United, that might give me the edge to get him maybe the job at Old Trafford. I hope not. I really hope he's not even being considered, but he might think that way. So he's going to be 100% committed to it, because himself, he knows that if he gets knocked out of it, I think at the end of the day, if he doesn't get the sack, he's going to have to walk away.
Yeah, that's probably true. And finally, make a prediction for the game at Craven Cottage on Saturday. Fulham against Manchester United.
United will win, it's as simple as that. Fulham got their win last night, so they think everything's going well again, but they don't. Fulham win one and then go and don't win three or four. There's too many issues going on at Fulham anyway. Martin Yole's not a popular person. Berbatov's gone now. Straight away has caused a problem, because there's issues with him already. That,
what issues?
Well, the manager's, you know, he's the manager's son. The other players are disgruntled over the T-shirt he put down, just relax, like virtually just relax, give it to me. In other words, he's promoting himself, I'm better than you. And in fact, he is better than a lot of those players, but you don't ever disrespect your teammate. It's as simple as that. And you don't disrespect a footballer. But then, if you've got enough about him, you hate him that much, like I do Joe Barton, then you don't care what you say about him, but you don't disrespect your teammates, because at the end of the day, you're always going to need him at some point, and when he's getting maybe the crap kicked out of him somewhere, he's going to want someone to protect him. At the moment, I can't see too many wanting to protect Berbatov.
So if Joey Barton's connecting flights in Singapore at some point, he's best not to give you a call and come into Raffles and have a beer with you?
I've got no interest at all with him. No interest at all. I've seen enough about him already, and I get told by certain people and everything, he's a nice fella, he's this, he's that. Yeah, people mostly tell me that Hitler was a nice person to get to know him, but still, I wouldn't even want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Thank you for your time, Paul.
No worries at all.
So that's it for this issue of the United We Stand podcast. I'm going to be at Fulham this weekend recording the next podcast. The next issue of United We Stand goes to print on Tuesday. It comes out against Everton. So if you subscribe, make sure you get your subscription in order before next week. We also offer digital subscriptions through iTunes for Apple tablets, through Android tablets, and we're going to sort out the Amazon Kindle Fire as well. Until next week, goodbye.